Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, June 19, 2017. A Sudanese medical doctor was gunned down in Yambio town by unknown gunmen.
The government of Gombe State, through its organs, have arrested some people who could maybe lead us now to who shot Dr. Ismail. Up to now, it's not yet clear who shot him.
And the Speaker of the Transitional National Assembly abides by the requirement of joining the East Africa Assembly.
According to the East African Treaty, which I have the copy of it here, it is the House which will elect, elect these people who will go there.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Residents of Yambio town woke up today to a shocking news. One of their medical doctors was gunned down by unknown assailant last night. Gudwe State Minister of Information Gibson Bulenwande says the state is investigating to establish the motive behind the murder of the director of Yambio Hospital. Wande says residents of Yambio town are still terrified by the killing of the Sudanese medical doctor.
Dr. Ben Muhammad was gunned down in his house, and his wife was injured. So he died on spot during the shooting. So indeed, we are very, very, very shocked. The people of Gombe State are very shocked about the death and trying now to figure out exactly what transpired, what now led to the death of Dr. Ismail Muhammad.
And who shot him?
Up to now, we have not directly identified who shot him, but the government of Gombe State, through its organs, have arrested some people who could maybe lead us now to who shot Dr. Ismail. Up to now, it's not yet clear who shot him, but through the investigation which is going on as I'm speaking, maybe we will identify exactly who shot him at night.
What is the impact of the death of this doctor on health situation in the state? I understand he's the only medical doctor in the whole of Gudwe State.
Dr. Ismail is among the doctors who came to Western Equatoria by then in 2010, before the independence of South Sudan from Sudan. Of course, the doctors who were brought from Khartoum, Dr. Ismail was among them. And then the others who came with Dr. Ismail left, but Dr. Ismail remained until to date. Dr. Ismail has been in the Yambio Civil Hospital for the last 7 years. The death of Dr. Ismail has really created a big gap in the medical operation within Gombe State, because Dr. Smell has done a lot. Smell is the brain behind the progress of Yambio Civil Hospital.
How many doctors are running the Yambio Civil Hospital?
Currently, I don't know the exact number of the medical doctors in the Civil Hospital, but he is the head.
What is the security situation in Yambio? Are people moving freely? Is there any fighting in the area?
The security situation in Yambio since the appointment of the new governor of Gombe State has been stabilizing, has been normal with isolated cases. We are expecting now the death of Dr. Ismail might be kind of a revenge or kind of an isolated scenario where it could maybe a targeted kind of killing. That's why I said we have to investigate. Of course, the security apparatus are doing their best to get some information, of course, about could there be anything that Dr. Ismail might have wronged somebody and the person is trying to revenge, or what is it? So we are not preempting what has happened exactly, but what we know is there might be something that is in between. It's not a security kind of situation, as I say, but this is like an individual revenge. It's an individual attack. There's something that has happened between maybe the late Dr. Ismail and somebody. So we have to investigate and find out.
What is the nationality of this doctor?
Dr. Smail is a Sudanese from Darfur region. He was posted here since 2010, before the independence of South Sudan.
What is happening now? Where is his body? Is the body going to be transferred to Darfur? What is happening? Can you tell us more about that?
Dr. Smail, after living here for all these years, he turned his religion to Christianity. What is the Christianity? And then he also joined the Christian community. So as such, the community of Gombe State, all the Christians of Gombe State, agreed that Dr. Ismail should be buried here in Yambio.
That's Gibson Bulenwande, Minister of Information for Gombe State. He was speaking to me from Yambio earlier today. South Sudan's transitional parliament has revoked an order by President Salva Kiir appointing 9 lawmakers to represent the country in the East Africa Legislative Assembly. 2 weeks ago, the East African Court of Justice issued an executive order blocking South Sudanese lawmakers from taking oath of office in the East African Assembly after a Sudanese citizen sued to stop the swearing-in, charging that President Salva Kiir violated the procedures by appointing the lawmakers to the East African Assembly. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Last week, the East African Court of Justice said South Sudanese citizen Wani Santino Jada withdrew his petition to block the swearing-in after the South Sudan government agreed to hold an election for the country's representatives to the regional parliament rather than having them appointed by President Kiir. South Sudan Assembly Speaker Anton Lino Makana says President Kiir was unaware of the EAC procedures.
The secretariat did not give us the relevant laws so that we can read, and then after that we elect these people as per those rules. And that is how, when they say they need 9 people, we use the same rules that we use here on how to appoint ourselves, and then we send those people.
Makana admitted that Mr. Kiir also ignored gender equity rules the EAC established for member countries.
According to the East African Treaty, which I have the copy of it here, it is the House which will elect, elect these people who will go there.
South Sudanese lawmakers have formed a 5-member committee to organize elections for South Sudan's representatives to the EAC Assembly. Committee member Professor George Breng, also a member of the National Transitional Legislative Assembly, says the group will adapt to the EAC Assembly election procedures. Breng says the process will be democratic, adding that members who are nominated cannot be ministers or lawmakers in the transitional government of national unity.
Members of parliament or parties in parliament are eligible to select one of their own and propose him for a position in the East African parliament, so long as the person is not a member of parliament. The same thing with all other political parties.
Breng says parliaments will be allowed sufficient time to conduct the election to avoid any perception of bias that may arise.
I think as a country, we should be very careful about dealing with issues. And our lawyers particularly should be helpful in this situation, both in with the office of the president and also in parliament. Because this decree, if our lawyers were really aware of issues, was unnecessary. It makes us look a bit bad.
The committee is yet to choose a date to present to parliament a list of guidelines and procedures they will follow to conduct the elections. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
Imatong State Governor Tobielo Alberio Oromo has reopened the State Legislative Assembly after Speaker Ben Loki resigned over the weekend. 2 weeks ago, Governor Oromo refused to open the State Assembly until Loki steps down. Loki's successor was sworn in today, as we hear from Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
After refusing to step down for weeks, Ben Palatino Loki bowed to pressure from Imatong SPLM party officials and resigned yesterday during a closed-door party meeting.
There will be a consensus of me stepping down as the speaker.
But Loki says he agreed to step down on the condition that all assembly business committees remain unchanged.
Deputy Speaker, the chief whip, all the chairpersons and their deputies will remain in their places. And there is going to be a document written and will be signed by me and all members of the Angus House to sign that document as a testimony to secure everything.
Governor Oromo instructed lawmakers to work to reunite their communities, restore peace, and prepare for the national dialogue.
We need equal representation. We need equal sharing of power and resources, because to maintain peace and harmony in South Sudan. I thank you very much for really technically handling this small issue that has dragged us for 2 months. Peace come today in this house.
Charles Odwar was sworn in as the new Speaker of the State Assembly. Odwar says he is ready to work with the governor, but once he must respect Parliament's independence because the people expect change.
It cannot be business as usual. Our people expect us to help fix the economy and security. improve access and equality and quality of education, health care, and generally give them hope, so that those who have left the country due to their current crisis will come back home with great hope. This parliament is for the people of Imatong State, and they want us to be honest, accountable, and responsive to their needs.
Flora Ileha Matias, chairperson of the State Assembly's Information Committee, says she hopes the new speaker will work with lawmakers to address the chronic problems facing the state.
It was not good when we are just here. 6 months research, which is supposed to be three, but become six, which really, really bad. It affects why we have a lot of problems, as we know that the assembly could help in another way. But the closing was not good, but it has already opened. I think with a new speaker, we are not saying our former speaker is not able to do this, able is a leader. But time, which there is change, the change has come and we accept it. Now we are going to continue. I think parliament was parallel, but now with a new speaker, I think there will be unity. We shall work together how to come one and we solve the problem of our people.
For weeks, the state's lawmakers were divided over whether Loki should resign. Many demanded that the assembly be reopened so that MPs democratically elect a new speaker, which did not happen. Ruling party MPs held the closed-door meeting yesterday to handpick the new speaker. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
On this International Day for the Elimination of Sexual Violence in Conflict, South Sudanese women are calling on the government to punish rapists and other sexual offenders. They say there should be deliberate efforts to encourage women and girls to report cases of sexual violence to police. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
Juba resident, 35-year-old Dorora Buga, says gender-based violence is embedded in South Sudanese society, but the worst type of sexual violence happens to women in conflict areas.
Many women are being raped. There's a lot of also gender-based violence. Of course, not only rape. That's why this is to give awareness to the people about the existing violence.
Rabuga says people should talk publicly about the problem of sexual violence so that the perpetrators will be arrested, charged, and if found guilty in a court of law, sent to jail. Another resident, 30-year-old Hilda Lisi, says law enforcement should work together with rights activists to report cases of sexual violence and on prevention measures.
It will be better for them to coordinate together so that awareness will be raised in order to eliminate this day. They can create other strategies, like social workers will be encouraged in all areas so that they can report to respective places.
16-year-old Naveen Joseph says domestic violence is particularly rampant and girls are often the victims.
If the girl does something wrong, like our elders, they think that if they beat, maybe the girl will change the behaviors. For them, they don't think, they just beat. If you come and talk slowly, they will understand.
The Juba-based Community Empowerment for Progress organization, or CEPO, has launched a prevention and response strategy to combat sexual violence and provide legal services to victims. It calls on law enforcement, community leaders, and humanitarian workers to work together to provide legal and medical services to victims of sexual violence while developing a long-term plan to reduce the number of rapes and other sexual attacks on women and girls. CEPO Executive Director Edmund Yakani says he will work with the South Sudan National Police Service and other institutions to implement the plan.
This strategy is going to be translated into action. We are aware that our police are already having really practical actions, and we have seen that our army also have plans of actions really to fight sexual violence. So as a CEPO, we're using this strategy as a framework to really work with the military and to work with the police to fight sexual violence in our country.
Brigadier Daniel Justin is spokesperson for the South Sudan National Police Service, says law enforcement is determined to curb sexual violence in South Sudan, but it will not happen overnight.
We have our challenges, right away from our cultures. Our cultures are sometimes very difficult, very difficult. We are facing a lot of it, especially with early marriages. And then we have also some cultural behavior of not reporting or not speaking out when sexual violence occurred. They are not reported to us as a police.
Justin says, through education, harmful cultural practices can be eliminated. Peke Ulatalo, Chief Deputy Inspector at the United Nations Police in South Sudan, says, if victims come forward and report the crimes committed against them and the laws are enforced, sexual violence can be eradicated in South Sudan.
What we need is good ideas, good strategies and good action plans, and finally, the most important, the implementation. We might have many plans and strategies, but if we don't implement them, then they are for no use.
Ulatelo says, humanitarian intervention to prevent and respond to sexual violence should target the most vulnerable first, including young and elderly women, as well as displaced women and women with disabilities. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at refugee children. That story is coming up next.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what makes you laugh?
When I have freedom in my life, I can laugh.
These are funny things that normally a human being does, an animal does, anything that is funny.
What makes me laugh is something that makes me happy. Fun, comedy, anything that is funny makes me laugh.
It's according to the person you're talking with. It's according to the mood you wake up with. You can even laugh at something when it's very simple.
When someone crack a joke, when I see something funny, yeah, that makes me laugh.
The times you went through with others, friends, or something like that. Okay, anything good that has ever happened to you in your life.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Many South Sudanese refugee children in Uganda hope to beat the odds, attain an education, and take part in rebuilding their nation when they grow up. Reporter Mungume Davis Rakarinj spoke with South Sudanese children studying in government-sponsored schools and those in makeshift schools in Ugandan refugee settlements to learn about their experiences, and has this report for VOA.
Soil is the top layer of the earth in which plants grow. Can we read together?
Soil is the top layer.
About 100 pupils of Longamere Primary School in Ivepe refugee camp attend a science lesson under a tree that provides a shade. Some have books, while others just listen carefully to teacher Raymond Mule Kenyi, who also serves as deputy head teacher. 15-year-old Jackson Morris Bidali, a primary six pupil, says studying outside isn't easy.
The pupils, even they can suffer because of the rain. Even there are other pupils, they are running to the office because the office is the one, the room is which is better. But our books also, they will be rain because of the rain. They will soak in water.
There are only three classrooms at Longamere Primary School, where there are 3,500 students. Morris says he wants to become a pilot in South Sudan. He says there is no running water at school, and pupils like him are often thirsty if the UN water tankers have not delivered water on time. His classmate, 15-year-old Eve Semila Thomas, says there are no chairs to sit in or desks to write on.
We don't have school uniform. We don't have books and bags also. We don't have stools to write from.
Both Semira and Morris say they would like to study on their own during breaks, but the school does not provide textbooks. Teacher Mwele Kenyi and 16 other South Sudanese have volunteered to teach at the school for the last 3 months. He says they have received no compensation from the government, but the biggest problem is class size.
The congestion in the classes is too much because the number of the children is really very big. We have enrolled about 3,000 plus, and this really makes teaching not to be really active.
Kenny says most teachers and children get through the day on an empty stomach.
Which one is the sender's address? We have those parts there. Yes, Sanya?
Madu Primary School, P.O. Box 36.
Near 30 primary 7 pupils at the government subsidized Ifoko Primary School in Koboko District study an English lesson. One of them is Agnes Awate.
My name is called Arch Agnes. I'm 15 years old. I want to become as a doctor in future to treat people.
Agnes fled Morobo County with her parents when fighting erupted there. She stays in Koboko, where her parents are trying to start up a small business. Agnes says she borrows textbooks and reads ahead on her own.
I don't know how to study now. Then I went to office and borrowed books from our teachers, and then our teachers gave us, and then we studied at home.
Agnes did not know how to speak English, which enrolled in school a year ago. Her teacher, Juliet Drachilu, has 10 South Sudanese pupils in primary 7. Drachilu says most of our students from South Sudan work hard.
In that class where I teach, those from South Sudan are excellent in terms of discipline and even performance. Others are the ones leading in the class.
She says she enjoys her work and earns a decent living. Government teachers in Uganda are paid around $100 a month. Back at Longameri Primary School, Kenyi receives no salary, but says he teaches because he wants to see the next generation of South Sudanese succeed.
As refugees, we feel that we have to help our own sons and daughters. Yeah, that is why we are tolerating the situation. These are the children we think when we shall go back, they will be the one to be our future leaders.
At Longameri Primary School, the bell rings and children head home, not knowing whether they will get any lunch. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Still on South Sudanese, over 900,000 South Sudanese in Uganda are in need of life-saving assistance, but funding shortfall make it difficult for aid agencies to meet the growing needs. Michelle Kagera, Amnesty International's Deputy Regional Director for East Africa, tells Ayen Bior only 18% of the funding needs has been met.
We've got killings where men's throats have been slit. They've been stabbed multiple times right in front of their families. So it's really a consistent pattern of complete disregard for the rules on conduct of hostilities, and is pretty consistent with the kinds of violations that Amnesty International and other organizations have been documenting since this conflict began in South Sudan.
Amnesty visited refugee settlements in Uganda. What did you see there?
What our researchers saw was really a host of refugees, the bulk of whom was women and children. Refugees who have been given a plot of land, they've been given some material to build their houses, but many of them really struggling to put up their shelters, many of them struggling to access basic humanitarian needs. There was a real problem with regards to access to potable water, access to sufficient food. We had cases of refugees with disabilities that were not able to move around. And then lots of young people milling about, clearly have experienced trauma, not having sufficient access to education, no access to livelihoods, and really no options. So it was quite a dire state of affairs. Their stories are horrific, and that really does raise concerns, especially about the kind of refugee response that's there. This is a case that's quite rare right now, frankly, where the host country is pretty much doing their part with regards to the refugee response. But the refugee response is still woefully inadequate because there isn't sufficient funding, there isn't sufficient support to ensure that these people who have fled such trauma, have fled such a dire situation, are at least able to begin to put their lives together again.
President Donald Trump's budget proposal would slice funding for a lot of programs that a lot of aid agencies that I've spoken to have said are crucial for refugees. But the American president says that these cuts are needed to balance the U.S. budget. What do you make of that argument?
Well, it's very concerning. Certainly, if the budget cuts go through, that would be a major disaster for the humanitarian response. I think some commentators have said that it would just drop humanitarian response down the abyss. This happening at a time when the number of shocks with regards to different country systems, with regards to the levels of humanitarian needs, are unprecedented. So certainly it would be quite unfortunate if Donald Trump went through with his budget cuts at a time when the international community met in New York and agreed that what was needed was a comprehensive refugee response framework. They all signed up to it. And within that was really a deep commitment to support and collaboration and really dealing with these issues together. And if the budget cuts go ahead, it will essentially be a cop-out by the U.S. and basically saying it's up to you.
That was Michelle Kagere, Amnesty International's Deputy Regional Director for East Africa, speaking to Ayen Bior from Nairobi. And that brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Yala Kitautu by Victoria Ole.
Yalla kitautu, yalla kitautu, yalla yalla. Yalla kitautu, yalla kitautu, yalla yalla. Kelli ni najere, yalla ni najere, yalla yalla. Kelli ni najere, yalla ni najere, yalla yalla.
We've been listening to Victoria Ole with the song Yalla Kitautu. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Yalla.